This podcast is brought to you by DIA, the trusted global neutral forum for healthcare product development professionals. DIA, driving insights to action.
Hi, I'm Sudip Parikh, and I have the privilege of leading DIA's activities in the Americas. Today, I'm here with Dr. Patrick Brady, who's with Regulatory Affairs at Bayer. We're here at the DIA 2018 Global Annual Meeting in Boston. Patrick chaired a diamond session yesterday titled The Future of Pharma Tech. And we're going to talk about that a little bit and maybe some other things as well. Thanks for joining us, Patrick.
Hey, thanks, Sudip. It's a privilege to be here. Thank you.
Terrific. Pharma tech. You know, we've sort of, in our conversations together, we've almost coined a phrase here. In your own words, what would you think of as pharma tech being?
Yeah, I think pharma tech is very much like the analogy of fintech or regtech. And that is the idea of how do we actually leverage innovative technologies to really kind of help us do the work that we do within the pharma R&D space. So there's a number of different ways in which we can talk about it, whether it's artificial intelligence, natural language processing, machine learning, blockchain technology, but this kind of panoply of technologies that we can use to help either make a lot of our operations within pharma R&D more efficient, faster, cheaper, less expensive, or ways in which we can involve patients in the R&D process in a less cumbersome way. How do we bring the clinical trial closer to patients? So to me, this idea of pharma tech is really represented by the idea of how are we leveraging innovative technologies to do the work that we do.
Yeah, to make patients better, faster. I was lucky enough to be on your panel.
Thank you.
And I got to tell you that I could not have been more impressed with some of the panelists. I could have listened to Dina Katabi all day as she talked about the work going on in her laboratory. The Wi-Fi sort of use so that you can track people's breathing, heart rates, it's something out of science fiction. And I hadn't even thought of that as being part of sort of pharma tech because I didn't even know it existed. Were there other pieces that sort of surprised you from any of the other panelists in terms of technologies or use cases?
Well, Dina's a rock star, and I think it was really great that we had her as part of that panel and that she was involved there. And I think one of the key features of that discussion was bringing the academic viewpoint. You know, Dina's a established professor at MIT and is also a member of the National Academy of Engineering. So I think bringing that perspective into the intersection of this conversation will be increasingly important as we go forward. But I think the examples that she was talking about in terms of the technology that you've mentioned here becomes very important. I think when we think about pharma tech or we think about AI technologies in the work that we do, I've kind of organized it in a couple of different ways in my mind. On one branch of the tree, you see a number of examples of where companies in the industry are thinking about how do we use these kinds of technologies to improve our operations, kind of our in-house, kind of, I don't want to say back office, but you know, a lot of our compliance activities, a lot of our tracking activities, a number of the things that we do within regulatory and pharmacovigilance that are really kind of more operationally centered. What was refreshing and kind of like, oh, look up at the horizon about what Dina was bringing us was ways in which we can use these technologies to enhance patient care, to improve the way that we conduct clinical trials. And this becomes more around kind of the data transfer and the way that we interact with patients. For a long time, it's been about enrolling patients in clinical trials and they have to come to some big academic medical center that might be 200, 300 miles away from them. These technologies allow us to basically think about how do we bring care to the patient's home? How do we make it less cumbersome for a cancer patient to participate in an oncology trial?
Yeah, that's extraordinary. It was extraordinary. I got to say that it's so exciting at these times. And people might be wondering, why were you and I on that panel? Your title is in regulatory affairs. I'm a biochemist. And I thought it was interesting because it's really because we care about the end product. One of the biggest things is how will these technologies affect regulatory affairs? What have you seen so far in your own organization or maybe outside?
What I see is a lot of experimentation. And I think that's what's happening inside of Bayer. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what's happening across the industry. Yeah. I think there's big visions about what's possible. And I think it's going to come faster than we expect. But the experimentation that's going on right now is very important because I think it's helping people kind of understand what the technology can do versus what it can't do. So what has motivated me about this is I come at it from a perspective of policy and intelligence. Really the intelligence kind of part of that. You know, we have information coming from a lot of different sources and a lot of different places. And how do we make the best use of that information so that we can do our jobs better? Artificial intelligence helps us do that, right? So there's a growing volume of information, whether we're talking about the 250% increase in the number of new FDA guidelines in the last 5 years, or whether we're talking about the growing volume of clinical data that's coming out of clinical trials. No one person can manage that information just with the capacity of their own mind. Yesterday on the panel, you may remember Dr. Francis from FDA talked about looking at 40,000 documents and trying to get a single reviewer or a single individual to be able to review 40,000 documents in a single period of time and how difficult that was. And then when they incorporated the machine technology, they were able to review those 40,000 documents in 23 seconds.
Yeah.
It actually became too fast.
Yeah. Had to slow it down.
That's so right. There is a patient element to this, but the first step in how to actually better process information is an attractive feature for me.
Dr. Skip Francis was terrific. He talked about real examples that he would use to justify their investments at FDA.
Absolutely.
And I thought that was really telling because, you know, we've talked about FDA and their funding. In the past, FDA has not been they've not been the recipient of a whole bunch of congressional largesse, right? They're always sort of at risk. This year in the president's budget, they've got a $400 million increase requested. And part of that is aimed right at these technologies because they want to be ready. I thought that was really cool. And Skip Francis is definitely leading the way in terms of some of that work.
He absolutely is. And that was one of the key takeaways for me. I was impressed at just how far FDA is on the path here. I learned a lot from that conversation with Skip and truly gives me a lot of optimism about the future here.
Yeah. And, you know, as we think about what comes next, you and I are both involved in a project on Pharmatech, sort of looking at solving that question that you're talking about, those experiments that are happening around the industry. Maybe we should take a couple minutes to talk about that. You are one of the founding members of that group. And what it really is the idea that there are these experiments going on, but we're not all aware of each other's experiments. And some of us may be ahead, some of us may be behind in some of these areas. And can we just get a landscape picture of who's doing what? How is that going to be helpful to you at Bayer?
Personally, I think it's going to be extremely helpful. I mean, I've talked before about the fact that we know there's a lot of experimentation going on in this space. A number of companies have made public statements or proclamations about the work that they're doing. Just in my own kind of back of the napkin kind of calculation of this, what we see is at least 13 of the top 20 pharma companies are doing some kind of experiment in using artificial intelligence in the pharma R&D space. But it's all different. You know, there's a company that made an announcement of working with a vendor to think about ways in which they can decrease the development time of immuno-oncology products from like 12 years to 8 years to 6 years. There's another company that has used artificial intelligence technologies to decrease the amount of time it takes them to respond to an FDA safety inquiry by a factor of 10. Another company that has used AI technology to build professional networks internally to connect people that are working on related topics or related subjects that might have an interest and say, oh, I never knew that person was working on that. So having that landscape view of what's going on will help all of us learn, right? How do we actually connect these things together and learn from what's going on? I think there is a certain kind of commercial or proprietary kind of feature to what companies are doing. I believe there's probably more than 13 of the 20, and like sometimes you like don't want to tell people.
Right.
So kind of having that view of like what's actually happening will help us kind of learn like, okay, what are areas for new use cases? Not so much what's the level of investment, but to basically benchmark kind of where we are.
You know, I can imagine as we go forward, eventually there will be places where it just makes sense to use artificial intelligence or blockchain or whatever the technology is, and there'll be places where it just doesn't make sense. And sometimes the hardest thing is to say, nope, that's the area where it shouldn't be. And hopefully we can help solve that. Well, terrific. Well, Patrick, I've really enjoyed our conversation. I enjoyed our panel. And I look forward to continuing to work with you in the future.
Hey, it was a lot of fun. Thank you for the opportunity. And thank you for what DIA does in this space. I think I've said a number of times that from a change management and thinking about the future, right, when we think about the impact on people, how do people interact with technology and what does the future hold? I think our work is going to be different 5 years from now and 10 years from now. And An organization like DIA and what it does for its members in terms of professional development and exposing people to new ideas and new topics becomes increasingly critical as part of that continuous learning piece. So thank you for the opportunity to do this, and thank you for what DIA does.
Yeah, I really appreciate that, Patrick. Thanks. Thank you so much.
To learn more about this topic, visit us online at diaglobal.org.